Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash, as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to The Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
Hannah, there's no excuse for anyone out there not to find a film that they identify with this week, because there's so many.
Tons, and we didn't even see them all.
We didn't. We skipped like three or four of them. I mean, there's over probably 10 new releases if you venture out into those select theaters. There are so many this week.
And there's even one on Netflix in case you decide to stay home.
Yeah, and we are going to cover one that's video on demand. But first, I got us a beer.
It is a Dead Guy Ale called Rogue, and it's got a skeleton thing of some sort on the label. And so, I would venture to guess maybe that's related to, well, that could be related to a bunch of things. It can be related to Onward, and because it's all about sort of conjuring up a dead guy. Actually, that's perfect. And also, it could relate to the final movie, I think, that we're going to talk about, which is called Extraordinary.
I related it to Extraordinary because it's like half the cast is dead people. So.
Well, and you haven't seen Onward yet, so you wouldn't even have realized.
Well, I saw the preview, and I saw there's like the floating pants.
Yeah, that's sort of a dead guy.
All right, but first, we are going to start with what made you the most excited this week, which is your boy Ben Affleck, is in The Way Back, and he's there doing some basketball, I guess, and it's directed by Gavin O'Connor, who we do know, because they just did a movie together 4 years ago called The Accountant, which I believe we both liked.
I've liked The Accountant. All the movies that that this guy has done. He also did Miracle.
Yeah, great movie.
And
they've been in the news lately.
Sports drama. And he also did Warrior, which was also a great, very underappreciated sports drama. So what we get with The Way Back is a guy who knows how to do a good sports drama and who has also done a good sort of action sort of drama with Ben Affleck before. So I think you get a little bit of everything in this particular film. Ben Affleck's been everywhere, so I can't imagine that anyone isn't aware that this is sort of meant to be this role that it's about his own redemption and comeback in addition to the redemption of the character that he's playing. And what makes it a conventional sports drama is you have the standard. You've got a really bad high school team that's floundering and has just for years has just not really accomplished anything since the Ben Affleck character was actually on the team. And Ben Affleck is called back into this Catholic school where he was the star player and asked to coach these kids. And of course, you know, they start winning because he's an inspiring coach. And so that's where it takes a very familiar path, but what makes this more of a hybrid of a conventional sports drama with a psychological drama or character study is that then you are going into really into the character of Ben Affleck's character, this coach who is an alcoholic. And so Ben Affleck has made no secret of the fact that he is an alcoholic, and he really talks about how alcoholism led to the destruction of his marriage. And in this film, you get the same kind of thing. You get an alcoholic who, due to some personal tragedy that unfolds that we hear about, really then that leads to the implosion of his marriage. And he is a drunk. I mean, this movie, the first 30 minutes is just beer. It's just pounding one beer after another everywhere, in the shower, in the kitchen, in a bar, in the car, and so, you know, you're just sort of trying to figure out, is he going to be able to stay sober long enough to coach these kids? Is he going to drink himself to death? So it's an R-rated combination sports drama character psychological study, and it's because Ben Affleck's performance is so good, you buy into it. And his performance is very good because you're watching it knowing the parallels between his real life and the art of the film.
Is there good basketball in the movie?
There is some fun basketball. You know, it's high school players, and so it's very standard sports drama where you got all the kids with their individual quirks. A little bit like reminded me a tad. I think there was even some mention of like The White Shadow, which was a TV series back in the day about a high school coach and his basketball team. And so this has some fun basketball, but it's a split. It's like half of the movie is the kids learning their life lessons through the eyes of the coach and what he's able to bring to the table, and the coach himself having to learn some very hard life lessons.
Does it surprise you, or did you expect it to have such a high tomato meter? It's got 85-86%, way up there.
I mean, everybody in the theater certainly enjoyed it. And again, it's because Affleck's performance elevates what would otherwise be a pretty conventional drama. For the R rating, I think it was only rated R for pervasive language. And I'm sorry, every teenager, every kid would be used to hearing that kind of language. Mm. So I think it's perfectly acceptable for some basketball loving high school kid to go see this movie, because there are lessons to be learned, and it's like any of those kinds of things where the kids learn from the coach and the coach learns something from the kids, and you just hope in the end that he's on the right path. And why I think you would have really liked it is because it's not as clean cut rah rah ending. Like it's not a completely expected ending.
You saying I like downers?
You like downers. And this isn't a downer ending, but it's not all quite tied up neatly in a bow. Like everything that you think might happen and how it might play out, it doesn't quite go there, which some people will find satisfying and other people might not. But for the most part, I'm not surprised at all. I think everyone's rooting for Ben Affleck. He is on this sort of personal redemption publicity tour. And one thing you learn from watching this film, which he actually shot right after he got out of rehab. So that had to be incredibly strange for his co-stars, for the filmmaker, and for Affleck himself to be shooting this film when things really were still so raw. And I think that rawness and that authenticity just comes through in the performance. And I think people were feeling that. And there's really nothing to not like about this movie, which I think is why it's doing well on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, prepare yourself for this forced transition. If you are good enough at basketball, you can make a lot of money. And our next film is all about money.
Oh, he's playing a song.
We're going to talk about greed. We're going to talk about greed. Michael Winterbottom.
Rich man's world.
And ABBA's going to help us get there. Now, you know Michael Winterbottom. He has made 3 trip films with Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. The trip to Italy, the trip to Spain, foodie movies. Mm-hmm. And they're always pretty funny. They do their impressions and they're very good at them. I've been following Michael Winterbottom a long time, all the way back to 2002 when I saw 24-Hour Party People. There was 9 songs, Tristram Shandy, A Mighty Heart, which he did with Angelina Jolie about Daniel Pearl.
Oh, right.
He's prolific. He's a prolific British mm-hmm. director. And now he's back and he's got a message. He's got a social message that he's going to hide under a thick layer of satire. And he's skewering the fashion industry, the exploitation. They charge these high prices, but they have these sweatshops in Sri Lanka and Bangladesh making these for pennies on the dollar. Capitalists who view money is self-worth. So Steve Coogan's back. Him and Michael Winterbottom have a long history together. So he is playing a fashion industry tycoon who is turning 60 and has just taken over the Greek island of Mykonos. And he's flying in all the A-list celebrities. He's building a coliseum. There's a gladiator theme. He's on top of the world. He's a sleazeball. He's a bad dude. His family is just as miserable. But it doesn't matter because they have money. And even though it's not illicit. He says nothing he does is illegal. He gets called in front of parliament and he says, "No, what I'm doing is you let me do what I do." You know, he raids his own companies for money until they go under. What makes greed sort of a mess is it's all over the place. I love that it has a message. I've seen movies skewer the fashion industry before, and I hope I see more. But there's Syrian refugees in here, which, okay, you're in Greece. There are Syrian refugees everywhere. But they get lip service. It's not heeded why they're there. His character is, I don't know, are we supposed to like him or are we supposed to hate him? It's a gray area. It's nebulous. I laughed. There are laughs aplenty in this film, but it's so slapdash and haphazard to me.
Yeah, I just couldn't get into it. I mean, I was watching it more for the island scenery of Mykonos, but this whole self-made millionaire, Sir Richard Greedy McCready, as he's known, his character is annoying, and you really kind of hope he'll get his due, and in the end, I think he does in a very nasty way. But I mean, it's like he's got a daughter who's doing a reality show, and so the cameras are following them on the beach, and he's got the ex-wife who comes with her boy toy, and then the new wife who, you know, is the latest arm candy, and then you've got the Greek the Syrian refugees, and you've got somebody who had come from those factories and has a grudge against McCready. And yeah, it's just trying to be too many things at once. And so you never really care what the heck is going to happen to any of these people. And so while I love Stephen Coogan, I loved him in like Philomena and the Trip movies. So, you know, I generally like him, but in this particular movie, just he wasn't doing it for me, and really the movie as a whole, I think, was just a bit of a hot mess.
Well, it's a very large cast, and it moves very fast. You actually kind of got to keep up with it. Little Asa Butterfield's in it as his weird son. There's so much going on. Then I think I liked it a little bit better than you, but I found myself even though it was moving fast, I was checking my watch by the end. Did you notice his mother in the movie, played by Shirley Henderson? Is she's actually 1 month younger than Steve Coogan.
Oh my goodness, really? Wow. Well, and they give Steve Coogan like these horrendous false teeth.
Yeah, because he thinks, you know, that's what's nice.
What's good. But it's distracting.
And it skewers celebrities who fly in for these things.
But it skewers the retail fashion industry. So, you know, you think twice about, you know, H&M, you know, trying to where you buy your discount clothes, because it's really talking about how, you know, what sacrifices are made in order to get those cheap prices for the average consumer. And so, yeah, it just, I get what it was trying to say, but I just think it does so in a way that's just not going to really attract many people to see it. I can't imagine that with all the different choices there are out there, that greed would be a top pick.
No, I don't think it will be. What will be a top pick coming out in this most crowded of weekends is a Pixar movie. A Pixar movie is coming out this weekend, and you saw it. It's called Onward. It's from Dan Scanlon, who did Monsters University way back in 2013. Tell me this. The last two Pixar movies were Toy Story 4 and Incredibles 2. Does Onward come close to matching those two?
I don't think so, although some people would say that because it's those were sequels and this is a new imaginative story, that it deserves, you know, some bonus points for that. But I did not feel the kind of emotion from Onward that I would have felt with all the Toy Stories. So it, to me, Disney Pixar movies are always going to be good. They're going to be well voiced. They're going to have great animation. They're going to have a decent story, but it almost makes a film that's just good disappointing to me. And so I think I saw Onward weeks and weeks ago. So it's almost like trying to now revive in my memory what exactly happened, but I just remember leaving feeling like, yeah, that was a decent movie, but I might be in the minority because it was a split. I'd say there was a bit of a divide between reactions coming out of that film, because we also were not so sure that kids will grasp what's going on in this film, because there's a premise. It's all very magical, but the premise is you have these two elf teenagers, a 16-year-old and a 19-year-old, these brothers, whose father died before one of them was even born, and they get possession of this magic stick that would bring dad back for a day. And so in the process of trying to cast this spell, only half of dad comes back, and it's the lower half, basically a pair of pants. And so there's no, the dad can't communicate other than, you know, toe tapping. And they take this half dad on this quest to find the gemstone that they need to then bring the rest of dad back. And so it reminded me of Weekend at Bernie's, where they're just kind of running around with this half dad. And so it's kind of more, I think adults will grasp it, you know, the messaging more than kids will. So I'd be really curious to see how kids like this film.
Pixar movies, especially Inside Out and Coco, have been known to make the theaters quite weepy. And considering that Onward is about an absent parent slash maybe half absent parent, are people going to be trying to shield their eyes when the lights come on?
Yes, because one thing Disney Pixar does really well is make people cry. And you get your cue. There is a music cue towards the final act that's like, get ready. Now we are going to really turn on the waterworks, or sort of prompt you to turn on the waterworks. And sure, the last act, the final act of this film, will make anybody who is a son, a daughter, a sibling, a father, a mother, it will make them weepy. It's just designed where the story goes to prompt that feeling, because everybody will be able to identify to some degree with the final messaging of this film. And so you play right into their hands, which also sometimes bothers me because it's like, oh, here it comes. They're gonna make us cry. But yes, I can't imagine that anyone with a heart would not get a bit misty-eyed towards the end of this film.
Onward has almost the exact same tomato score as the way back right there in the mid-80s. But I did see, because I looked it up, because I'm going to go see it this weekend, is that unlike Pixar movies, this has no after-credits scene.
Oh.
Can you confirm?
I can confirm, because I'm pretty sure we asked. I think as we were leaving, we were trying to verify. And so we did ask as we were walking out, because we were like, can we leave? and somebody did say, yeah, you don't have to stick around. There's nothing at the end. So I can't even imagine what they might have been able to tack on that would have not diminished the emotion you were feeling. And so it was probably a wise move.
Well, speaking of endings, you know, you said I like not the most upbeat endings when we were talking about The Way Back. And so our next film is Corpus Christi. And you've probably heard of Corpus Christi out there, folks, when you were filling out your Oscar ballot, because it was that one film in the foreign film category, the international film category, that you hadn't heard of.
That's right.
And now it's here. It's coming to select theaters, landmarks most likely. And it's from Poland. It is in Polish. You're going to have to read it. But you're all used to that now because you're still watching Parasite. Corpus Christi is rough, and it's not rough. It's rough in that we're watching a childhood juvenile delinquent whose, you know, juvenile home is not very nice. There are fisticuffs and gang problems. So he's on parole. Our boy Daniel, I don't know. It's hard to tell. Did he catch the spirituality bug in juvie, or did he exploit it? I think it's up to the audience. But he becomes very familiar with Catholic Mass, and he appears on the surface level to have latched onto it. Maybe he's a changed boy. Instead of showing up at the sawmill job that he's supposed to go to, he winds up in the next door village and is kind of lies his way slash mistaken for a new priest. He's got the collar and everything to prove it, and he can talk the talk, not necessarily walk the walk, as he feels his way through his first mass and confessions. And there's a slight comedy involved in that. So he's actually taking on the role of a new village priest, and it turns out, it actually reminds me of our discussion from The Way Back. He needs the village. He needs them to help his soul. Mm-hmm. That village is actually hurting. They've gone through a recent trauma, and they need him. They need him to revitalize and heal wounds, and they chafe and connect at the same time, there could be other things involved about critiquing the Catholic Church, you know, about the roles priests play. Do they really need it? Does it have to be a priest? Does celibacy the priest? That whole thing. Speaking of endings, I thought this had the most completely garbage ending of the entire year. It doesn't fit. It's ridiculous. It's awkward. It's stunted, and it ruins any feeling you had for the film, any momentum, any pacing. It's a garbage ending, but huge plus for Daniel Bertos Bellinha.
Oh, very good.
I saw one critic say this is a future Bond villain.
He has the most captivating face and eyes. Like, he has very clear eyes. And so whenever they'd have these close-ups, you were just captivated watching him. So it's very easy to see also why the town would be taken with his charisma. And so, yeah, the guy, it's in terms of casting, he really pulls off an interesting dynamic of, yes, one minute he's mixed up with very brutal things going on. And then the next minute, you know, he's being smart and heartwarming and helping somebody. And just like The Way Back, as you mentioned, I mean, it's another guy who's sort of looking for salvation and a path to redemption. But you're not always sure. It's like, is it legitimate? Is he just, how much of this is faking and how much of this is real? And that's where this film is really good. But I agree, it starts out really pretty violent. And so I think they were trying to sort of somewhat bring it back full circle at the end. But that was disappointing because that's not where I wanted to go at the end. And I felt that it just, it shifted the tone so much from where you'd been writing this film for an hour that I don't think, I agree with you that the end to me was definitely not the best way to go. But the actor is really, really interesting. And it's another one of these things where you've got this guy who, it goes to some dark places, but it does have its lighter moments. So you are able to breathe occasionally. And I think it moves pretty well. And as foreign films go, in these films that you have to read, I did go and watch this before filling out my ballot. We all knew Parasite would win. But this was definitely a worthy entry into the Oscar field from Poland. And so certainly if you're fluent in Polish, you even would probably enjoy this film even more. But I think it's a decent enough art house film for the foreign film crowd, but I'm not sure it's going to speak to the mainstream at all.
Well, it's more than decent. I really liked it. And just listening to it, Polish sounds like a very challenging language. Mm-hmm. I understand the director, Jan Kamasa. I understand his motivation. I kind of get where he was going, why he did it. It was a choice that he, you know, which way is he going to end it? And he chose that direction. I get it. There was a 50% chance it was going to happen. It's just so startling that he did it on purpose and it still worked.
Well, what I love is that this film apparently was inspired by real events. So apparently there are, not the specific story, but the guy who made the film had been reading about, there really is this thing in Poland and elsewhere of priest impersonators. And so it's apparently a thing.
Priest impersonators.
So this is a priest impersonator story that goes beyond the headlines and definitely is a twistier version of reality.
Well, the film I saw this week that you did not is called Escape from Pretoria, and it stars Harry Potter. I mean, you know, Daniel Radcliffe. You can watch it now, folks. It's on demand, so you can watch it on your television, and it's on digital. You can get it from Apple iTunes, the whole deal. You can watch it right now. And this takes place in the late 70s South Africa. Therefore, apartheid is alive and well. And Daniel Radcliffe is one of two gentlemen, two white men, part of the African National Congress, and they get busted for, you know, spreading leaflets. It's called terrorism, and they are shipped away to political prisoner, white man's prison for a long time, like 12 years. And it's a prison break movie. Mm-hmm. Therefore, there is a lot of suspense, a lot of thrills. You know, the prison guards are they on to them? Are they going to find the contraband? And the suspense works. It works just fine. I was ratcheted up for this 2-hour film. However, it doesn't break any new ground as a Prison Break movie. It's not Shawshank. It's not and it's not like, ooh, I've never seen that before. You've seen everything in here before.
But it is based on a true story.
It is. It's about Tim Jenkins. It's actually written from his autobiography, Inside Out, Escape from Pretoria Prison. And a lot of, you know, the relationship between the guards and the prisoners is not, it's not healthy. You know, they're not vibing. A lot of times they're called the White Mandela. And actually, that's not a compliment. It's actually the worst insult you can get in not only South Africa, but especially in this prison, you White Mandela. So it can get ruthless, but it's not over the top like prison violence. It kind of shies away from that, but it's not fairy tales either. I don't know, like, is there a genre out there where people are like, oh, I see all the Prison Break films? You do? I mean, really, are there that many? This is actually a good example of what Daniel Radcliffe, I think, is doing with his career. He's finding these off-the-wall, juicy scripts.
Trying to be as anti-Harry Potter as possible.
And it's working. I mean, he really makes some interesting, enjoyable choices, and this is another interesting choice from them. Obviously, it didn't latch on to Americans because it's coming out video on demand instead of getting a theater release, but I have no doubt it got a theater release over in England and probably in South Africa. You know, American audiences probably won't even understand what the late 70s were like in South Africa. So yeah, run of the mill, but if you like suspense and want to see what Harry Potter's doing nowadays, you could do worse than Escape from Pretoria.
Well, and if you're under quarantine, I have another film that you can also watch from home, which is just out on Netflix, called Spencer Confidential. So I saw that one. I never even pitched it to you because I figured you probably were too young to remember Spencer for Hire, the TV series from the mid-80s with the late Robert Urich, who was in Vegas and SWAT, the original SWAT,
you know what,
and
I
other
remember,
shows you never
I remember,
saw.
I remember Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Scarecrow and Mrs. King did not have Robert Urich in it, but I did watch Scarecrow.
Simon and Simon.
So this was probably just before, or I'm trying to remember, but I watched Spencer for Hire. And so the first thing I did was be like, well, is this the same Spencer, you know, because it takes place in Boston. And sure enough, it is. It's it's designed, obviously, as a potential reboot of Spencer, of that character. And this time it's with, you've got Mark Wahlberg playing in the lead role. And I was really just curious to see what Mark Wahlberg as Spencer would look like. And so it has to be a little more edgy to be a film. I'm not surprised this didn't get a theatrical release. It's one of those, it does, it's fine. It's good for streaming for Netflix, but it would not have, I don't think it reached the level of a major theatrical release, especially considering the other films that Mark Wahlberg has done with this particular director, Peter Berg. So this is like a team of, you know, they really just obviously like working with each other, because Peter Berg also directed Wahlberg in Patriot's Day and Deepwater Horizon and a film called Mile 22, and then going back even further, Lone Survivor, which was a very good film. And so these two, you know, work well together. And I think they had probably had some fun making this remake. And it's inspired anybody who's read the crime novels by Robert B. Parker. He created the character Spencer. And this particular story was inspired by a book called Robert Parker, B. Parker's Wonderland, which is a novel by a guy named Ace Atkins, who has continued the Spencer character after Robert Parker died. And so Spencer is this fictional private investigator from Boston. The movie opens and he's an ex-cop. He's been in prison for assaulting a superior. So he's been in prison for 5 years. He gets out. He plans to leave Boston. But of course, those plans kind of dissipate very quickly because his good old friend and mentor, played by Alan Arkin, asks him to take a look at this protege boxer MMA guy named Hawk that he wants Spencer to just sort of help with. And there's a Hawk in the original Spencer for Hire series. These characters are played, they are updated significantly and played very, you know, somewhat differently. But they both have each other's backs. They don't always see eye to eye, but in the end, they're going to have each other's backs. And so Hawk and Spencer's ex-girlfriend, who's this spunky firebrand chick, they end up getting involved in this very convoluted drug trafficking, bad, dirty cop plot. And two of Spencer's former colleagues have been killed, and Spencer decides to investigate and wants to clear the name of one of them who's been labeled a dirty cop. And he just gets embroiled in this whole, drug trafficking mess, and his life is on the line, and he gets beat up a lot. This Spencer gets beat up like every 5 minutes. He's just bleeding from something. And so it's a grittier, way more violent Spencer than the TV series of the 80s. But, I watched it as sort of a nostalgia trip. And I think if you Mark Wahlberg does decent, he's fun to watch. And so I think if you have that nostalgia factor going on and you like Mark Wahlberg films, then, you're flipping through and going, what can I watch on Netflix tonight? This isn't a bad choice. It's rated R. It has moments, but I think overall, if you are just trying to figure out something else to watch other than Harry Potter escaping from prison, then this is now streaming on Netflix.
I remember Peter Berg when he was back on Chicago Hope, and I remember I was in college when his first film came out, Very Bad Things. That only college boys liked. And I've seen all of his movies with Mark Wahlberg, and they've actually gone from the high note, Lone Survivor, and just kind of down, 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 down. Mile 22 stank. So I wonder if there's a reason that Spencer Confidential is just direct to Netflix film. I saw a review, and I think you liked it better than this guy, but he says, Spencer Confidential is the direct TV version of Denzel's Equalizer movies.
Yeah, it that makes sense. I would go with that. And it ends in such a way that you're like, okay, this is meant to possibly continue. That they are setting it up just as I felt like I was watching a 2-hour TV movie pilot, and so that's where I think if it does gain traction, you might see this pair back again, or you might see some TV network trying to look at whether or not this is a viable character to reboot.
All right, well, let's talk about the best film of the week. I'm talking about the film that actually has 100% on the tomato meter, and that's from 48 critics, which is actually quite a lot when you talk about no one's given it a Rotten Tomato. And we're talking about Extraordinary, co-directed by Mike Ahern and Inda Loffman. And I'm saying something when the biggest star in it is Will Forte. It's an Irish movie. It's shot in Ireland. It's staffed, casted with a whole bunch of Irish people. And it just played last week at the AFI Silver Spring for the Irish Film Festival. Extraordinary is a comedy. It's really funny. I laughed out loud frequently. I loved this actress, Maeve Higgins, as Rose Dooley. She's starring. Her character actually plays across a gentleman named Martin Martin. And she sees ghosts. She can communicate with ghosts. She can exorcise ghosts. She can get them out of there. And this little Irish village has a ghost problem. People that died and did not cross over. And it looks like, let me set you up on this. Will Forte is a one-hit wonder guy. He apparently, and it's no surprise that he's the villain. You know it from the first time you see Will Forte. He is the villain. And he's a one-hit wonder because he made a deal with the devil. If he sacrifices a virgin to hell, he can get a hit song. So he's obviously done it one time, and he wants to do it again. It's been a long time. He's had a dry spell, and he had this song called Cosmic Woman.
Yes. Hey, I can even play you a few bars. This, I'll see your greed, money, 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 and raise you a Cosmic Woman with Will Forte. Let's see.
We landed on the lawn. We danced until the dawn with the swans.
This is classic stuff.
And I sang.
I actually really liked that song. I know when I was watching the movie and they were playing this snippet of Cosmic Woman, I was like, oh, I want to go online and find that. It's actually a really good song.
I found it.
That could have been a one-hit wonder in 1982.
Well, I mean, it's cheesy. They amp it up to a total cheese factor. But I think if you haven't already grasped by now, this is a weird, weird movie. It's funny, but it is quirky to the max. It is a combination. It's like part Ghostbusters, part ghost whisperer and part weird romantic drama with some comedy. And the filmmakers actually describe it as a, quote, mysterious, romantic, oddball, ghost story, love comedy adventure. And so that's how they spin it. And that's exactly what it is it is so bizarre, but very funny and has some heart. I knew exactly where it was. I kind of knew where it was going to go at the end.
It's the best sex scene of the year.
Oh my gosh, very interesting sex scene. But even prior to the sex scene, I kind of guessed what was going to happen. And it is just, I think it has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes because nobody can really find fault with it.
No, and it's not trying to keep secrets or hide anything. It wears its heart on its sleeve, and it's not a skewer or anything. It's not a satire. It's actually way more innocent than that. And this falls under the category of, you know what, let's help keep cinema weird, because we have another Ghostbusters remake coming out this year, another one, and this is the type of Ghostbusters movie we need.
Yeah, it's a film that it dares you to like it. It really does, or at least get a good chuckle out of it, for sure. And this movie had the best production notes I have ever read, and you actually are dared to read the production notes as well, and they went all out. I mean, there is a video game that has its own trailer.
It's 8-bit.
There is a website for Rose's driving school, the main character, so you could go and actually, like, as if this character's website did exist. There's a music video and promotional campaign of sorts for this Christian Winter song, Cosmic Woman, that we just played. And so, for such a small, quirky film, it has really taken it to the next level. And when you start realizing that, then there's the love story between this guy whose dead wife is still sort of living with him, and their daughter is attracted to Rose, but needs her help, needs her psychic abilities to help keep his daughter from becoming Christian's next sacrifice. And so that's really where the love story comes in. And it is the strangest love story. And then there's some really gross stuff with, like, ectoplasm. I don't know.
Well, does watching a film as weird and quirky and out there as extraordinary make you want to keep going? Does it make you want to watch more Oddball Charlie movies?
It just makes me hope that more Oddball Charlie movies were as good as Extraordinary.
Now, I don't have my thumb on the pulse of Irish box office. I would like to imagine that this blew up Ireland.
Well, and I can't quite figure out how Will Forte ended up in it. So that was sort of the most interesting casting coup, I would say, for me, is, here you have this SNL alum who, I mean, is just perfect in that really bizarre sort of role. And you learn some really important lessons, like, you never wake a floating ghost.
Well, you got to watch it. Every now and then you'll come across a gloating, a goat floating.
That's right. So so it had those little moments that just absolutely stick with you. And the fact that I was as well prompted to go seek out Cosmic Woman that video online, I was like, that's pretty sharp. And so, Extraordinary is just... it's so impossible to really explain or describe to people, but you just have to take our word for it that it is it's worth finding.
Well, I know that there's a Ben Affleck movie and a Pixar movie and 8 other movies, but I guarantee you, the Extraordinary will be the best time you have in a movie theater this weekend.
I think so too, and it definitely will. Anybody, the quirkiness is just precious, and you too will want to go look up Rose's driving school online after you watch this film, and you can't help but root for Rose. I love Rose, and I love that here's this woman who she's just this lonely, she's been living this lonely existence, and she's kind of sad, and she can't use her psychic abilities because there was a snafu with her father, that plays into why she no longer wants to be the town supernatural expert. And it takes some very interesting turns, and does tug at the heartstrings in moments and makes you laugh in moments. And the woman who played Will Forte's girlfriend, she's hysterical. So everybody has some like really fun lines. And yeah, but it is quirky with a capital Q.
Well, we talked about just a slew of films this week. And let us know what you finally decide to check out this weekend if you're brave enough to go to the cinemas. Or if you just stay home to watch Spencer Confidential, and I think you can actually find Extraordinary online by now.
Or just look up the videos, because that's fun too.
Yeah, that'll work as well. But really, just an all-around wonderful film. So thank you very much for listening to this very full episode of The Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.